Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? This is Seth Green, and you are listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark, and I am so hot, I would desperately like a glass of water. Please, please, give me some water.
This is Cindy Preston, and I'm with Mark on Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Melissa Peterman from CMT's The Singing Bee and the television show Reba, and I have to tell you, I just have to get it off my chest, I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi there. This is Faith Roscoe from General Hospital. You're listening to Mark on Somewhere in Vegas. And you better watch out. We know how to find you if you're not listening.
Hi, this is Shannon Egan from Whippet. And I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hey, this is Lee Allen Baker with Somewhere in Vegas. Talking with Mark with a Q.
This is Courtney Cronin. You're listening to Somewhere in Vegas with your host, Mark. And I would make sure to listen every week because he's a sure bet.
Hey, this is the Money Man, Eddie Money. I've got two tickets to Paradise. And you know what? It's Somewhere in Vegas. And what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Hi, this is Crystal Gale, and I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Terry Nunn from Berlin, and you're listening to Mark Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Miracle Laurie from Joss Whedon's Dollhouse. There are three flowers in a vase, and I'm listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Erin Hill, and you are listening to Mark on Blog Talk Radio and Somewhere in Vegas. Mark is a great guy.
Hi, this is Sean Pulaski. I'm still trying to figure out Mark Pico's sexuality, but I know you're listening to Somewhere Live in Vegas.
Here you go, Mark. I'm sorry. I thought you were she. I'm sorry. Get out of the tent. Let's get out of here.
Hey, this is Lance and Anna from Free Radio. And Anna?
And you're listening to Somewhere in Vegas.
Yes.
My favorite.
You know, that's usually what happens with me. I go to Vegas and I get lost, and so I end up somewhere in Vegas.
Somewhere in Vegas.
But right. I just don't know where it is.
Not quite sure.
Yeah, word.
Get ready. It's going to be hot. It's in Vegas. Check out Mark. Be there or be square.
Welcome, everybody, to Somewhere in Vegas here on blogtalkradio.com. I'm Mark the Q. I'm your host. Very excited, new year coming in. We're going to be starting it off with a little bit of a bang. Our second guest will be at the bottom of the hour, will be Arthur Victoria Howard, and she'll be talking about her new book, Dancing for Dollars. But first up, we have a very exciting singer-songwriter out of the Pennsylvania area. He has a new single called Out Our Redneck of the Woods. Really interesting story, and we'll get into that in just a moment. But first of all, let me introduce you to Matt Weston. Are you there, Matt?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Hello.
How's everything going?
All right. Great, man. Happy New Year. How are you doing?
Doing great on my end, too. How was your New Year's? Did you know anything exciting?
Yeah, you know, I spent some time with family and some friends, and I actually got to sing with my friend's band at a nice place out here in Pittsburgh to ring in the New Year. So it was a very nice night, absolutely. How about you?
How's it out there in Pittsburgh right now? You know, obviously the playoffs are going on and all that as well, but how's it out there in Pittsburgh?
Well, it's pretty cold. We actually got a little bit of a break. It's actually 33 degrees right now. It was like -8 the other night. So, yeah, this is pretty warm today, but it's going right back down into the single digits pretty soon. Yeah, everything's dead and covered in snow. It's pretty gloomy. But that's, we have long winters here, so you just have to get used to it, you know.
Or all the more reason for people to go into bars, I guess, and listen to your music. I mean, how is the music scene out there in Pittsburgh?
Sure. Music scene's pretty interesting. You know, there's a big music scene, but a lot of it is underground. You know, we have a few big venues for big concerts and stadiums and stuff like that, but there are a ton of musicians in Pittsburgh and a lot of little joints that they play in. So it's an interesting town, and the culture is so diverse here. You know, there's something for everyone here. It's really interesting. I'm really enjoying it.
I mean, Pittsburgh's really known for its being very working class, and obviously, you know, country is especially kind of speaks to the working class and working class individuals as well there as well. You know, how is it for you to be able to play out there in Pittsburgh and to be able to, you know, just start your career out there?
Well, I think this is a great place to get started. You know, it's not Nashville by any means, but there's a great country music market here. Like you said, it's a working class town, tough town, and everybody from old to young seems to enjoy country music here. So I think I'm in a good place, and a good place to, you know, to launch my career from. So we'll see. We'll see where it takes me.
When did you start doing music?
I started recording this, my debut album, about a year ago, a little over a year ago. And, but before that, I've been involved with music for, the last probably 12, 13 years. And I've been singing all around the city. And before that, I played musical instruments in grade school. So music's always been a part of my life in one way or another. And now I'm actually pursuing it as my full-time career. And I'm really enjoying it. I'm glad I made that decision.
How many instruments do you play?
I dabble now. it's kind of fell off. I focused more on the singing for the past about 10 years or so. But, you know, I dabble with the guitar, and I played the bass and the bass in the orchestra, the big stand-up double bass. I played the trombone. I played the baritone. So this is all throughout my life, and I've been focusing more on singing, though, lately, and trying to get my chops up on guitar. They kind of go hand in hand, you know, with country music, so trying to get my chops up on that.
I mean, what's the process for you to write a song? I mean, are you lyrics first, or are you music first, or it just depends on what comes, you know, what comes into your head?
Nine times out of ten, I'm lyrics first. You know, when I was younger, when I was in grade school and, you know, teenager and things, I used to write a lot of poetry. So I think naturally lyrics just became the first thing that I would do when I write a song. And, you know, inspiration can come from anywhere. It's pretty random. Whenever the emotions are flowing and, you know, welling up inside, things just seem to flow. And I don't have a time or place where I usually write. When it comes to me, it comes to me. So, you know, when I write it, it could be in a hotel room. It could be in the car recording lyrics on my phone as I'm driving. You know, you never know where inspiration will come from. So.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because, I mean, I talk to so many musicians on the show, and a lot of them, you know, it used to be that a lot of them would carry notepads, or, you know, they would take a piece of paper or maybe a napkin or sometimes even an air sickness bag to write down ideas. But nowadays with the phones, it's a lot easier just to pick out your phone and just write stuff down. But you never know where something will spark an idea, I guess, is the main thing. But it's interesting to be able to see, you know, where some of this stuff kind of heads and kind of leads as well. Do you ever ever look back to some of your old stuff?
Oh, for sure. Every now and then, you know, I tend to be a little bit nostalgic. You know, I'm a thinker for sure, especially around the holidays, you know. Every now and then I'll go back and take a look and see if there's anything that that sticks out to me today, you know, that I wrote 10 or 12 years ago, and see maybe I could do something with it, you know.
What was the last time you saw some of the stuff maybe you wrote when you were younger, when you were, you know, maybe in grade school and did some of that poetry?
Let me see. Probably it was actually, I remember the exact time. And this ties into my whole album too, because the last time I looked through some stuff was when my father was in the hospital. And this was about a year and a half ago. Well, geez, no, 2 years ago now. 2 years ago. And I found some stuff that I'd written that I wanted to read to him to, you know, to encourage him. So it can be emotional going back looking at stuff. Yeah, but it's been about 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to lose a parent, you know, especially when your parent's going through, you know, a treatment, a long sickness like leukemia, and you know, how's it, you know, obviously you spun that into wanting to create this album as well. I mean, how was it for you to, you know, kind of help? And how has this help you cope with the passing of your father? And, you know, tell me a little bit about, you know, this concept of this album at all as well.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was completely devastated, depressed, just in a really, really dark place, not easy to be around. And I was lost, you know, just completely broken. It still doesn't even seem real. But I was not doing very well. And I moved back from Los Angeles. I was out there pursuing acting when he was sick. And I moved back after he passed away, you know, to be with my mom. They were together for 46 years, and now she's by herself. So I had to come back to be with her for my own mental health, too. But, yeah, my dad had always encouraged me to pursue my music because he loved when I would sing. He was just always so happy and excited, and he knew that I had talent. And I never pursued it until after he passed away, and I needed something to rebuild myself from scratch, basically. Something positive. And for some reason, I don't even know, I didn't sit down and think about what am I going to do. It just hit me. It was almost a spiritual experience. I just knew deep down in my gut, this is what I had to do. And it was to honor him and to pass on a legacy of my own. You know, that's why I named the album Legacy. You know, it all goes back to my father and his encouragement for me to record music. And now it kind of sucks he's not here, you know, to see it happen. But I know he's happy and he's proud of me up there in heaven. But this was a big part of me recovering from that loss. Absolutely. It was therapeutic for me, without a doubt.
Was a lot of the songs on this album stuff that you did after his passing, or was there some songs that you had in your back pocket that you wanted to do that you hadn't had an opportunity to do?
No, this all happened after he had passed. Like I said, I was in Los Angeles. I was pursuing acting at the time, and you know, still involved with singing, but I had no plans to record an album. Not until I came back to Pittsburgh after he passed away did it just dawn on me. And I felt it like in my heart and soul, this is what I have to do. So it was all after he was gone. So maybe he was speaking to me. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's great to be able to see, you know, like I said, you know, something beautiful end up happening after a tragedy like this. You know, it's interesting that, you know, you go back to Pittsburgh to do this album, and, you know, all the way from Los Angeles, you know, where, you know, I think Pittsburgh's a little bit more grounded than Los Angeles is, it tends to be, I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. How's it been for you? I mean, to be able to have that kind of groundedness and solitude out in Pittsburgh versus maybe the hustle and bustle that happens out in Los Angeles. I mean, how's that been for you in terms of your writing as well? I mean, that's got to be kind of something that's helped a lot.
Sure, yeah. You know, in some ways I think it has, because I'm definitely more at home here. I'm comfortable, and, you know, this is where all my experience is from for the vast majority of my life. So, yeah, Pittsburgh is definitely my home base, and it always will be. Although, you know, Los Angeles has its perks, and it has a lot of things that could motivate you or inspire you for writing a song. But I kind of felt like a fish out of water out there. And I'm happier here in Pittsburgh, without a doubt. And I think it's coming through in the work that I'm doing and in the studio. So, yeah, Pittsburgh is it's a great place. You should come visit sometime.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, with the digital revolution right now, it's so much easier to be able to do something, you know, in a different spot.
Sure.
People record albums, you know, other places in Los Angeles and in Nashville. I've heard many musicians on this program say that they produced it at a little studio, you know, maybe near where they live as well. And they could do it in-house if they need to, because the audio will work for them. With this album, mm-hmm. I mean, where was it recorded? And kind of tell me a little bit about the process of getting this thing recorded.
Sure, yeah. We recorded it here in Pittsburgh at a place called Tonic Recording Studios. I got hooked up with Brian Cole, my producer, through a mutual friend. And we were on the same page from day one. You know, he understood my story. He understood where I was coming from. And he believed in me. And he took on the project and helped me get some amazing musicians, local and some in Nashville. Like you said, a couple musicians, Mike Brignardello and Steve Hinson in Nashville recorded in their studio down there and just digitally sent it up here. So it is a small world now, you know, compared to what it used to be. You don't have to travel somewhere to record. So it definitely saved me a lot of money. That's no doubt about that. Yeah.
And Tonic, I mean, go ahead. I was going to ask, I mean, did you learn a lot going through the process? I mean, this is your first album to actually be produced. I mean, did you learn a lot in terms of being in studio and knowing what to look out for? And, you know, did you learn a lot?
I think this whole experience, and still to this day, is a learning experience for me, without a doubt. You know, I went into the studio and I was a pretty talented singer. And then by the time it was done, it was like I was a completely different artist. You know, I'd really found my voice and started to come into my own a little bit. And you know, I learned a lot about the recording process, about producing, you know, just watching my producer work, and about just the whole music industry. I'm learning every day, you know, with these interviews and dealing with my PR guy and just the publishers and everything. It's a learning experience from day one. And I, you know what? I think I'm going to continue to learn because, you know, it'll only make me better in the end. Absolutely.
One question I like to ask is about, you know, with your songwriting and all that as well. Was there a song in particular that was relatively quick for you to get to, and, you know, how long did it take you to write it?
Well, there are songs that sometimes take months, years, you come back to them, and then there's some that just flow out of you in 30 minutes, you know. It really just depends on the inspiration. I don't know. There's different levels of inspiration, I think, I've felt. Sometimes it just flows. Sometimes it takes a while, and you gotta let it stew a little bit longer. So, yeah, it's a little bit of both. A little bit of both.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to, well, you know, old material. You know, sometimes you just have to stash it away for a little while, come back to it. You know, a lot of writers, you know, do that. They'll have an idea, but they just cannot get to what they want out of the song. So they'll store it away for a little while and come back to it. So it's always interesting.
Absolutely, I think.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's normal. That's normal. The human brain can be pretty frustrating sometimes. You know, sometimes it clicks, sometimes it doesn't.
Now, yeah, you mentioned, you know, obviously Pittsburgh has a little bit more intimate setting in terms of, playing gigs as well. I mean, have you ventured outside of Pittsburgh, and have you played any bigger venues?
No, not yet. Not yet. That's all in the works for this year. You know, the album will be released on the 29th of this month. My single actually just hit iTunes today. So everything's just really starting to get rolling right now. And we're going to get some tour dates up, hopefully very soon. It's all in the works. Really looking forward to it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I mean, are you thinking maybe possibly doing a music video for this new single or any of the singles off the album?
Yeah, you know, people keep mentioning that to me. When's the music video coming out? And I think to myself, you know, I would love to do a music video, you know, especially coming from an acting background. You know, I know a lot of filmmakers that could probably help me with that, but there's a little thing called budget, and right now it's just not in my budget. So hopefully later this year we can get something like that going.
Well, yeah, you know, once you get a couple of gigs under your hat, maybe you can get that video figured out. So we'll see what happens later on this year, but. I mean, it's great to be able to hear, you know, that things are starting to happen for you here in 2018. How's it been just in terms of the fans out there in the Pittsburgh scene? I mean, do you have a loyal fan base out there? And how's it been to gain fans over this past year?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of loyal fans in Pittsburgh. I know a lot of people, you know, I've lived here my whole life. And it's really incredible the outpouring of support that I've gotten from the local people and friends of friends and friends of family, you know, just a lot of great, great support, helping me to believe even more in myself. Sometimes, you know, I need a little boost like that for sure. But it's incredible. Just over the last few weeks, I've gained fans all over the planet, you know, in Australia, Canada, the UK, and all over the country here. It's kind of surreal. It really is. So I'm looking forward to getting out there and actually meeting people and not just, you know, getting messages or getting likes on my page, things like that. Really looking forward to getting out there and face-to-face with some people. It's exciting. Humbling. It's very humbling.
What's been interesting is the fact that Europe has gained a lot of loyal following in terms of country music. It's been interesting to hear some of the artists that have been on here say that they've you know, they're country musicians and then they're over in Europe and they go over very, mm-hmm. very well. So it's mm-hmm. interesting to see that kind of shift right now in terms of the country music scene as well. You know, mm-hmm. speaking of the country music scene, I mean, was there anybody that you grew up with that you particularly liked in terms of the music?
As for my influences?
Yeah, some of your influences.
You mean? Yeah. Well, geez. Going back to when I was 3 years old, I remember my dad got me a cassette of Elvis, and I sat on my bedroom floor and I listened to Elvis, and I've always had a special place in my heart for him since then. But my influences range everything from Elvis and like Frank Sinatra to Johnny Cash and you know, Garth Brooks, Toby Keith. I like the edgier type country, a little bit more masculine, you know, a little more testosterone in it. So that's what, I think why I identified with them a little bit more. But yeah, I've always enjoyed so many genres of music. My influences are so wide. But if I narrowed it down, those would be probably the guys that influenced my style and my singing style and my music style. So I could go on and on about so many other people, but those are probably the ones that defined me the most as an artist.
I should tend to mention today is Elvis's birthday.
It is.
It is his birthday today. So, I used to do Elvis tribute shows every year. I've kind of weaned off of doing them, but yeah, they've always been fun to be able to talk to us a little bit about Elvis and all that as well. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, the guy that I interviewed with actually earlier today, I forget what part of the country he was in, but he actually worked with Elvis back in the 70s. So Elvis has been a topic today for sure. And I saw on Facebook it's his birthday. So happy birthday, you know, to Elvis in heaven, you know, that's pretty cool.
Okay. Let me see who this, caller is. It might be my other guest once again. 212, okay. Are you there?
Let me tell you why I'm calling. I represent several high profile people, one of which is Millie Bobby Brown. Name one of those boys from Stranger Things.
Okay, that was weird.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Give me
a second here. There we go. Yeah, that was absolutely weird. But anyway,
was that like a Howard Stern caller? Was that Howard Stern?
I have no clue. But anyway, no, it's been interesting to say the least about about Elvis and all that as well. I mean, yeah, I mean, he's had influence on you know, more than just country, rock and roll and all that. I mean, throughout the years. So,
mm-hmm.
That's pretty interesting. It's interesting. It's a really good, interesting list. I mean, a lot of the mm-hmm. younger people really, you know, I think we're getting into a generation where maybe they don't hear as much Elvis as they do, but Johnny Cash is obviously mm-hmm. somebody that they're recognizing a little bit more often because of mm-hmm. You know, Walk the Line and a lot of his later albums, which is really, really good too. So interesting.
He definitely has the staying power, you know, with some of this younger generation. I have friends that are 23 years old and they have Johnny Cash posters in their house. You know, that's really cool.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I mean, just the shift in what country is right now. I mean, we're here, country has shifted more a little towards the pop end of things. And the lines are starting to get blurred quite a bit in terms of what's country and what's pop. But, you know, I do kind of miss some of the old, you know, the outlaw country. And, you know, I was always partial to the outlaw country, like Willie and Johnny Cash and Waylon.
Merle Haggard. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's interesting to say the least. Even Dwight Yoakam, I like actually too. And actually, he doesn't produce himself out of you know, either Texas or Nashville. He's more out of California, so that's pretty interesting. So,
Well, he's an actor as well, so that's probably why.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, are you looking to get back into acting eventually?
Yeah, it's still a passion of mine. You know, right now my focus is music 100%. But the acting is always going to be there. It's, you know, it's part of who I am. So, you know, I think the singing and the acting could go hand in hand. You never know. Opportunity could present itself. So it's definitely something good to have in my back pocket, you know, for interviews or for, you know, maybe I get a bit part on that TV show Nashville or something. That would be awesome.
It's definitely a good thing
to have in my pocket.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there always could be productions that go up in Pittsburgh, you know, you never know. A lot of companies are moving their productions to different places, you know, if they get enough tax breaks. So maybe Pennsylvania will convince some people to go into Pittsburgh to shoot a couple things. But we'll see
that
what
is happening
with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the song
Pittsburgh's pretty big with
already.
Production. So.
Yeah. The song Our Redneck of the Woods is currently out on iTunes, so you guys can check that out as well. At @Matt_Weston on Twitter and Matt Weston on Facebook. Anything coming up or anything that you need to add, Matt?
Well, over the next few days, the single will be available on, 35 different sites, everything from Google Play to Amazon to Pandora and Spotify. You know, it's already up on iTunes. So definitely keep an eye out for that. And my website, mattweston.com, will be updated very soon with all the information for purchasing my album, my single, and all the news about me. So keep an eye out on mattweston.com.
Well, that is it here, and I really look forward to seeing what goes on in terms of the album and the touring this year. If you end up making it out here to Vegas, let me know. We'll definitely get you back on the show, and maybe we'll have you back on later this year once the album starts rolling, and maybe get another single out.
Mm-hmm. That would be wonderful. Yeah, I really appreciate it. Vegas is one of my favorite places to visit, and it's been probably 2 years, so I'm due to come back. So hopefully I'll see you soon.
Oh, definitely. I hope you perform out here at some point. So, have a great, great new year in 2018. Looks like it's going off to a great start, and best of luck to you.
Thank you. You too. You too, man. It's very, very nice talking to you.
Okay. Thank you, Matt.
All right. God bless. Bye.
That was Matt Weston, everybody. You guys can check out his new single, Our Redneck of the Woods, currently on iTunes. You'll be able to find it everywhere else a little bit later this week. Matt_Weston on Twitter and his website as well. So make sure you guys check that out as well. Our second guest, I believe, is just called in. She is an author of a really good book called Dancing for the Dollars. I know a lot of people, Las Vegas locals, will be very interested in this book because it talks a little bit about the world of stripping. It's been garnering a lot of media lately in terms of social media and all that as well. It'd be interesting to see this thing turn into a movie. But without further ado, we have Arthur Victoria Howard on with us now. How are you doing, Victoria?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How's the weather out there in Florida?
Believe it or not, I have the heater on. It's cold. It's cold for Florida.
You must be getting part of that winter cyclone bomb thing of a jigger that's going up northeast.
Yeah, I guess we get the tail end of it. It's still like 60 degrees in the day, so that's not bad. I'm not complaining. It's ironic. Your last guest was from Pittsburgh, I believe. Is that right?
Yes, correct.
So am I. I was born and raised in Pittsburgh.
Oh, I was going to ask you if you were up from the Northeast.
Yeah, I'm from Pittsburgh originally, and then I even lived in West Virginia for a while. I was Mrs. West Virginia in the Mrs. America pageant. And then I moved to Florida when I got divorced about 17 years ago. And I was like a bird out of a cage. And that's how all the books came.
I used to live in Florida as well. I was on the West Coast, the Gulf Coast, living over there.
And beautiful.
The thing is that if you were anywhere south of Orlando, you're back Northeast, because there's a lot of people from Boston and New York that moved down to Florida. I was interested to see if you're a Northeasterner in terms of, living in Florida as well. I mean, it's a wild scene down there. You know, I've been to Miami a couple times to be able to experience that a little bit as well. But tell me a little bit about the inspiration for this book. I mean, It is kind of a crazy party scene down in Miami, but, you know, tell me a little bit about the inspiration for the book and how you got started with it.
Okay, sure. I talking about Pittsburgh, when I was 16 years old, there was a dance show on TV that was like American Bandstand, and I was just a high schooler, and I became Miss Pittsburgh Agogo. So I would dance on drums, you know, drums around the band on a TV show, but we were clothed, obviously. It was completely clothed. It was, you know, televised. And that's how I got into the real world of knowing the girls that did this professionally, because they were much older than I was. And I got a lot of crazy stories. I got a big education at a young age. So when I moved to Florida it's been 17 years, I befriended the owner of one of the largest strip clubs down here, Solid Gold. He was a very good friend of mine, an awful nice guy. And I used to go in and have dinner with him in his cabaret, which was a 5-star restaurant. And I would sit in the front with him, and all these beautiful girls would be walking through. They're young, you know, all walks of life. And they would be walking through, and I would, you know, see how they interact with the customers and all the customers that come, and the money that was going through their hands. I said to my friend Mike, the owner, I said, can I interview these girls for a book? I've already written, up until that book, I've written 14 other books. So I've never written a novel, and I wanted to write a novel, Jackie Collins novel. And he said, sure. So I interviewed the girls, and I got to tell you, oh man, the stories that are there, they're unbelievable. Now, the book is fiction. It is not, you know, about anybody's life, but I did take a lot of the stories and I embellished them. And I'm not just saying this, it's really a good book. I mean, it's getting outrageous reviews, all 5 stars. And, you know, I'm hoping it's going to be a movie. I'm praying it is. In fact, Ray Liotta, just the actor Ray Liotta, has it in his hands right now. He's looking at it. So let's just say a little prayer.
I'm interested to see, you know, if it does become a movie, who will be cast in those roles. I mean, it's been an interesting couple years in terms of what what's going on, because it seems like two extremes. There's the stream that, you know, the pro-female movement's going on, but yet there is an empowerment in terms of you know, showing one's sexuality, which has been interesting as well. There's been, you know, it's kind of been, a dichotomy between the two. So it's very interesting to see the nonetheless. You know, it's very interesting. The scene here in Vegas is a lot different than what you'd think the Miami scene is. I mean, Miami scene is a little bit, you know, I think here it's more, it's hard to kind of explain, you know. Here it's more, a little bit more businesslike, you know, or, you know, it's kind
right.
of more of a transaction. And more in Miami, it's more of a party, I guess. Party
it's,
you know, so.
Definitely partying, yeah. It's a big party. there's the money in the club, though, I had to do, obviously, a lot of research. And the annual revenue globally is $75 billion a year, $75 billion in the gentlemen's clubs. I mean, we're and most of the they don't like to be called strippers, exotic dancers, most of them, they average in Florida probably, depends, 50 to 100,000. You know, now the average earnings in the United States is 125,000. Now, where do you tell me where a girl is going to get that kind of money? Just dancing. It's. I mean, you know, I know people with college educations and they can't get jobs.
Yeah, you know, and the interesting thing is that, you know, I think Miami seems to have a lot more money going through it than here out here in Vegas, which is interesting as well.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. Another interesting thing that's going on over here, I don't know if they have these out in Miami, but one or two of the strip clubs out here actually accepts Bitcoin now as a form of payment.
I don't know if that's about you guys yet.
Uh-uh.
No, I don't know. I don't believe it has. No, really. Mm-hmm. You know, the way I wrote the novel, I didn't degrade the dancers. Mm-hmm. I show there's four different girls, young women. They're all 18, and they all come from – one comes from Japan, and her father owns practically all of Japan. He's the wealthiest man, and he overprotects her, and when her stepbrother rapes her, her father doesn't believe that, you know, that he raped her, so he kicks her out of the country. She doesn't know where she's going to go. She goes to Miami. Then the second character is Francesca. She's an Italian Catholic from Philadelphia, and she got pregnant by her high school sweetheart, and when he said he didn't want the baby, she was devastated, so she gave the baby up for adoption and moved to Florida. And then the third one was a beautiful Swedish girl from Sweden, really intelligent. And she was going to college, and she had an affair with her female instructor and was caught and was thrown out of school. So she ended up going to Florida. And the fourth one is a hermaphrodite. And he's a Jamaican hermaphrodite. And it is really, that's another thing that I had to do a lot of studying and research on, and it just blew me away. I mean, it's these people are human beings, okay? And this particular character had to fight the demons all his life. He did pass as a woman by getting breasts and dancing, and he managed to hide the little extra package that came, you know, that he had to get taken removed off. And it's just, I mean, the story is really, it's just, there's two parts. There's a first book and a second book. The first book is they're dancing for dollars, how they meet and they bond. And they dance for 3 years in Miami. And then the second book is when they all go their separate ways. And one becomes the next Marilyn Monroe in Hollywood. One becomes the new Heidi Fleiss. You know, this is the little Japanese girl. She becomes the madam to all the politicians. So there's a lot of espionage and murder going on there. And then the Sweden girl, she falls in love with America's top model, and she marries her, and they open the largest modeling agency in New York. And the hermaphrodite opens a big nightclub in Miami. So it's really... It keeps you, you know, you don't want to put the book down. You want to know what's coming on next.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there are receptions about, you know, strippers being not so smart, or, you know, they all obviously, you know, a lot of them come from broken homes, but some of them come from difficult circumstances, and some of them actually come from a relatively, a relatively stable environment, and then suddenly decide to do this, but. A lot of them, you know, quite a few of them are relatively smart in terms of what they're doing. I mean, they obviously, you know, want the money, and they'll turn that money into something. I'm reminded of a scene in I'm trying to remember what the name of the movie was, when they were talking about the housing market, I cannot remember off the top of my head, but there's a scene in that movie where They're at a strip club. You know, they track down this gal who bought a bunch of houses down in Florida. You know, it ends up being a stripper, and they tell her about, you know, obviously the housing market's gonna about to crash. So, you know, you better better watch your back, and talking to her about this. But yeah, a lot of these gals, you know, if they're smart, they diversify their funds, because if they get, you know, stripping as much as it is, you know, you're getting a lot of money, you don't have a long of a lifespan in terms of it, because once you lose, you know, you're going to get kicked out. So, you know,
it's like a
professional
model,
smart,
you know,
in terms of, you know, keeping, yeah, to diversify.
Well, some of the girls I interviewed, they were from third world countries, and they had families back there that they would send money home to. Some were single mothers. Some were putting themselves through college. And then, of course, you get some that just were doing it to, you know, move into porn. And then they got, unfortunately, some of them got addicted to drugs and had their pimps, and they destroyed their lives, of course. You know, but you can't label and you can't judge one person. And that's why I wrote the book. All these women, they come out on top, which is, I'm all for that, woman power, you know.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I mean, it's just interesting, you know, like I said, you know, they do all have different stories in terms of what they are. It's hard to, I mean, nowadays, I mean, it used to be the fact that, you know, you could make that stereotype, but nowadays you truly just can't. It's just, you know, they come from different circumstances, and some are willing to take off their clothes in order to get to that point where they can be financially stable and, you know, work their way up through the, you know, whatever they're doing in the next step of their lives. So, you know, it is interesting to kind of look into some of these people's lives. I'm very interested to see how the movie ends up turning out when it comes out. I'm gonna say it when it comes out, because I think it's going
to be. Let's be positive. Yeah. No, you know, it's funny because Channing Tatum, you know, the actor Chris Pratt, Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
That blew me away. They were all strippers. I never knew that Brad was. And Lady Gaga, Catherine Zeta-Jones, whoever thought, you know. Anna Nicole Smith, of course. Diablo Cody. These were all strippers. And they went on to, you know, become movie stars and celebrities. So it's not a derogatory occupation. It's what you make it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, it used to be the fact that, you know, if you did this and it got out, that it was some big, huge form of scandal. But nowadays, it is more relatively accepted. I mean, you know, with sex tapes and in all this, it's kind of like, you know, it's just like, you know, it's kind of almost, I won't say normal, but it's almost, you know, accepted, you know, that, you know, oh, well, you know, they got in trouble maybe a little bit earlier in their lives, or they stripped when they were doing earlier in their lives. You know, there isn't really that much of a, you know, it doesn't ruin their character as much.
I agree with you. You're right.
So
you're totally right.
It's been interesting the past 20 years how that shifted.
Well, they have male strippers too down here. You know, they have male strip clubs. The same thing. I had to go and interview the male, even though the book wasn't about the males. But it was amazing to see some of these beautiful men get up there and, you know, strip. Some of them stripped down to nothing. Some of them left something on. But they did it, again, for the money. Big, big money.
Yeah, but obviously the women get probably a lot more money than the guys do, though, more than likely.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And then also, it's, you know, people always ask me, well, what happened behind the curtain? That is something I say you have to read the book for. Because it's, you know, everybody always wants to know, what goes on behind the curtain? You know, does anything really go on? I said, read the book.
Yeah. I mean, not to say that it's also very dangerous at points, you know. I think a lot in terms of the security of the dancers have been something that's been in the forefront for a while now. You know, there's always those dangers in terms of, you know, doing this profession as well. And I hopefully that we dive in a little bit into that in the book as well.
Well, you know, the thing about it is people don't know that there are cameras in the back rooms. We have, you know, the men do watch what's going on to a point, you know what I'm saying, and make sure there's, but when people come in, they don't see if you have guns. They don't, you know, throw you down to see if you have knives. This is what worries me, and I told the girls. With this crazy world today, you could be sitting in church, or you could be in a grocery store, and somebody comes in and blows you away. I mean, it's a crazy world out there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, and somebody gets obsessed, you know. There's always those guys that are a little
obsessed. That's what happens. That's exactly what happened. There was one story. This girl was what they call the men. They call these men whales, like a whale. And they're the ones that they come and they get obsessed with a girl. And some of these men, they come every single day that this particular girl that they're obsessed with dances. And I don't know how they do it, but, you know, I just hope they don't take the money away from their families or whatever. That they put all the money, they just, and the girls, you know, one girl said, I feel bad, but if I don't take it, somebody else is. And she's right.
Yeah, it'll be, it's like I said, it's a, you know, it's an interesting look into what goes on there. There's so many complex things that go on that people probably don't recognize in terms of it as well. So it's, you know, it's very interesting. And again, I'm interested to see how, you know, how this kind of thing happens, you know, in terms of it as well. Now, Dancing with Dollars is currently out. Is the second book out yet?
No, no, honey. It's the book and what I'm talking about. It's one book. It's book one and book two.
Oh.
And what it is, it's the first section is their lives from when they're 18 and when they meet until while they dance for 2 or 3 years. Then this book two is, you know, it goes, and I left it open for a sequel. I know a lot of people have been writing to me and calling me and saying, well, oh my gosh, the way you left it, you know, when's there going to be a sequel? There probably will be one, I'm sure, but, you know, right now we're getting this book out. And it's just one book. It's 350 pages. You can buy it right now on Amazon, at Amazon Online, or Author House, the publisher, either one. It's $20, I believe.
Now you said this wasn't your first book. You've done books before, right?
I did 14. Yeah, I've been writing. It's funny how I got started writing. I never thought in a million years I'd be a writer. I race horses, and breed race horses, and I was a model, like I said. And when I got divorced and I moved here, I kind of went a little wild because I was married. And never, you know, it flew my wings and met a lot of interesting people. The Rock, I mean, I met a lot of interesting people. And everybody, my girlfriends would say, my God, Vicki, you've had such a wonderful life, crazy life. Why don't you write a book? And I said, you know what, maybe I will. And I wrote, the first book I wrote was called Why Women Love Bad Boys. And I was on Fox and Friends with it, and now it is sold it in 15 countries. So, yeah, this is my first novel, though.
Okay, yeah, I mean, so you've crossed over from nonfiction to fiction.
I've also written children's books. People have asked me to write children's books. I've written horse books for my industry. I've written self-help books, and, you know, I have a lot of genres. I don't stick to one, but this has been my what I like the best, because I do have a crazy imagination, I have to tell you.
Well, speaking of horses, I mean, have you had a horse yet that's made it to the Kentucky Derby at all?
My horses are standardbreds. That's the Sulkies. And I've had not a world champion, but I've had some very good horses. Yes, they race in Canada, they race in New Jersey, they race in Florida, and they're my babies. That's my family, my kids. I have right now pieces of I think 20 of them, and they see mommy coming with carrots, they get all excited. You know, nothing like an animal. They give you unconditional love.
Is breeding just as important in Silkies versus like you know, racehorses? Obviously lineage is very important, and heredity is very important. Is that important in your horses as well?
90%. yes, is knowing who to breed your horse to. It's funny, I went out to Kentucky and I wrote the book on the Kentucky Horse Park. I wrote that book as the only one that's been out there. And I also wrote, I was writing a book on California Chrome. And I went up to meet him, and what a handsome, boy he was. So, you know, a horse to me is a horse is a horse, okay? Yeah, we race for, they race for a lot more money than we race and a lot more prestige. But I grew up with the harness horses in Pittsburgh. And you know, I stuck to it, and I just love it. But that's my life. My life is either writing or horses.
And I would almost say that it almost tends to be a little bit more dangerous, the harness horses, too, because you also have the cart. And if you've ever seen any of the matches with the carts, I mean, those look horrendous.
I got to tell you, the first one I ever raced, and this is heartbreaking, she died in a race. And that was many years ago, but she broke her leg. And I couldn't talk about it. I couldn't look at a horse for a long time. And it's very, people don't realize how dangerous it is out there. But these horses are bred to race.
Yeah, I almost wish that, you know, at some point where, I don't know why anybody's not thought about it yet, but if, you know, somehow where they can have some kind of brace or something like that. So
I know.
You know, after they break a leg.
I'm an animal lover. And I really don't. People say, why are you in the business? You know, because it is, if I could afford it, if I was a billionaire, I would have them all just turned out. You know what I mean? And not racing. But I take good care of my horses. They don't race when they're sore. They don't race when they're hurt. My drivers, they know that when they come back, if there's a whip mark on them, they're in trouble. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It's scary. It really is, but it's an exciting business also.
Yeah. I mean, on a side note, have you been to the Kentucky Derby? Have you ever been a part of that?
You know, it's so funny. I have not, and I wrote the book for the Kentucky Horse Park. Never been to the Derby, and that's on my bucket list. I have to go there. Wear the big hat. You know, I go to Saratoga a lot, Saratoga with their thoroughbreds, and that's a party town now. If you've ever been up there during Horse Week, oh my gosh, it's another big party. Always
so
parties.
Yeah, I hear so many things about some of the great restaurants that are out there, and you know, just the kind of the fanfare that's out there, and it's more of a fancy fanfare though too, versus what you usually get anywhere else. I mean, you have to dress up, you have to look nice.
It's a fun week, and it's always around my birthday, the end of August. It's called the Travers, and that's when all the big horses go, and then the parties happen, and the restaurants are fabulous, and the streets are great. They have, you know, statues of the horses, and it's just a really fun place. You should go sometime.
Yeah, I would absolutely love to go to the Derby. That's, again, on my bucket list, too. And I know my parents would love to go at some point as well. It's, you know, we've always been horse racing fans since I was younger. So.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'd go to horse races every summer and watch the horses and bet and all that as well. So, yeah, we were – that's how the joke has always been that's how I learned math, is going to the horse races and betting on horses.
That's funny. Well, if you ever come to Florida, I'll take you to see my horses.
Oh, I'd absolutely love to if I ever get back out there as well. But it sounds like you have a really wonderful life out there. You know, these books are, you know, it's great to be able to see that you're a working author and you have so many books out there as well. You know, so I mean, people can look up your Victoria Howard on Amazon. You can take a look at some of the other books as well, because I want to also plug those things. If this certain book, you know, interests you, or another book interests you as well. So make sure, I mean, I'm pretty sure a lot of your catalog is up on Amazon as well. So if people want to learn about horse racing children's book or whatever.
But I do want to say something. It has to be Victoria M., like Mary Howard, because there is another Victoria Howard author in England. And, in fact, she wrote to me and said, do you mind putting an initial on your name? Because she keeps getting the same problems. And I said, not at all. So now I've written the books. It always has Victoria M. Howard.
So make sure you guys check out Victoria M. Howard on Amazon.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, so definitely check that out as well. Now, are you on any social media, any on Twitter, on Facebook at all?
Oh, yeah. I'm on Facebook, Victoria Maria Howard, or Dancing for Dollars. Twitter, Dancing for Dollars. The Instagram, Victoria M. Howard. You know, they're all on pretty much my name, or just Dancing for Dollars. I'm on all of them. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And cool as well. Do you have a website at all?
The website right now is getting redone, and it's going to be victoriamhoward.com.
Okay, so definitely
should be
check
up
that
in
out
about
as
a
well.
Week.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I really, you know, like I said, I'll be interested to see how this book goes, and hopefully, hopefully when the deal goes down in terms of the movie, maybe we'll talk to you again. I mean, it's an absolute pleasure to be able to talk to you, and you're fascinating. We could go about another half an hour about your very fabulous guy. I want to give you some time, but maybe we'll have you back on. Maybe we'll have you back on around the time of the Kentucky Derby to talk a little bit more about your horses and see how everything goes.
That would be great. That'd be great. And anytime, just let me know. It's a pleasure.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Victoria. I mean, like I said, it's been an absolute fun time to be able to talk to you about all of these, all your books and everything like that as well. And you know, best of you in 2018. I think there's going to be some big things going on with you. So, but, you know, best
thank
of luck
you
this
so
year.
Much.
And have some fun and hopefully get a little bit warmer.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Victoria.
Bye bye.
Bye. That was Victoria M. Howard. I check out Victoria M. Howard on all of her books on Amazon, Victoria M. Howard, M as in Mary, as in marvelous. You guys can check her out there as well. Her new book, Dancing for Dollars, so definitely check that out as well. If you guys are looking for some reading material to warm up in the cold winter coldness that is the Northeast, definitely check that out as well. Next week, I will let you guys know what's going on. I'm going to take a look and see. There's a couple of people that have been requesting to be on the show, so we will get back to you on that. We'll be doing these a lot more often now that the holiday season's over. I have a lot more time to be able to do some of these podcasts, so we're going to try to get two or three guests every week. I kind of roll through there as well. I know there's a couple of guests that we had, I think, about 2 months ago that we're going to have back in February since Valentine's Day is coming up. I know there'll be one day that I won't be doing a podcast, or we'll be doing a live podcast from a remote location. I will let you guys know. Please follow us on Twitter at SWIV. That's at SWIV. We Periscope once in a while, so you'll be able to see what's going on there. Somewhere in Vegas on Facebook, you guys can check out that as well. Some of our old interviews. We've had some really interesting guests over the past couple of weeks, so definitely check that out as well. You know, it's been great so far coming into 2018. The two great guests today, Matt Western and his single that just dropped, Our Redneck of the Woods, is currently on iTunes, and it'll be available everywhere else coming up later this week. And then, like I said, Victoria M. Howard on Amazon. You guys can check out all of her books, including her current book, Dancing for Dollars. You guys can check that out as well. With that in mind, we'll see you guys next week, same time, Monday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. We will have a couple guests on. I will let you guys know what that is a little bit later this week. With that in mind, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.